So, dear girls, it's time to talk to you again today on Saturday. I'm clean and sober tonight. And although I alluded something yesterday about not wanting to record another episode this weekend, I cannot be loyal to this plan. Because, well, this ejected me out of myself, or the volcano erupted again yesterday, and I can't do nothing. Please, girls, just understand that this is my condition. Like, yeah, podcasting is my habit, is a condition also. It's an impulse, a desire, something you have to do. Like an addiction, it's a automatism, right? An automatism, like, feels natural, you can't even resist. Although I was planning yesterday, when smoking, I thought, oh yeah, it would be great to record a private episode now, talk about just for myself, about what's happening in my brain and with these girls. What am I even thinking? I can't figure it out because it's so strange now, this feeling. Why even is this now bringing in Zoriana when at first I didn't want to or forbid myself all these last month? I really forbid myself to think of you, Zoriana, in any romantic way. Well, in erotic ways, yes, maybe the sexual desire can't be pushed away or turned off, but of course I never thought like about having a romantic paradoxical relationship, maybe like I proposed yesterday. And yeah, yesterday I told myself I should do a private podcast, but then when I came here, couldn't help myself. I mean, what can I do? And I thought, well, why not just bring it out to these two girls? And I mean, if I got anything to say, why just say it in secret? Why not say it all openly? And this is also your spell, Lilia. What you told me about openness, and feels like I'm compelled now to open myself up, really dig a tunnel into myself. And, well, I'm also an actor in a certain way, but I'm still the real person, or at least part of me. I mean, it's the same body, the same eyes and brain that's going to walk into the office at work again next week. But, I mean, yeah, who's to say what would be real crazy and what would be normal behavior. I mean, this is not such a difficult Unterscheidung. Where is this Scheid, the frontier between normal, sane behavior and insanity? And as long as nobody tells me or no doctor comes to me giving me diagnosing me, as long, yeah, I'll be keeping on going and be on my track. And this is my track. I do here my episodes. This is episode number, oh my god. Well, this can be a German episode, because we always get some German poems to read out. So this can be number 172. Welcome to all people of the world. You all are invited to listen, if you dare to, if you want to. But I'm singularly speaking to you, to Ukrainian flowers, because I gotta be clear, I gotta know and find out what am I even saying and what is this gonna be? An awkward situation then back at the office. But why even? I mean, Soriana, I think that you are brave and maybe are thinking about one day coming to see me and starting conversation, and I will give you all the time in the world. And only if I feel okay, yeah, it's too hard for you girls, then maybe I might take the first step again. But with Lilia, with your sense, yeah, you're a little more reluctant even, and maybe even, yeah, are like me, wanting to play on this game, this blockade to, like in the Cold War, the blockade between the two blocks, capitalist and communist bloc. And yeah, you know, in the end you will win, of course, because the communist bloc and capitalism, well, at least back then was stronger, but won't be forever. But of course, I want you also to win and to dominate over me. And so we're good to go. We set the stage and have an outlook now for the next week and or weeks. And yeah, we just have to work. I mean, work is what's giving you purpose in life, and therefore I give you this program here as a kind of relaxation program, entertainment for after work or even for when you're working. You can tune into this. It would be great, of course, for me also to imagine that when you're sitting there and with your earphones plugged in, that you might be listening to me, and I might be giving you this pleasure in this exact moment, although I'm physically now working there opposite or diagonally opposite you. And but here we gotta be really, really precise. This ambivalency came into my podcast with this episode number 153, when I talked the first time, or the first time that extensively and personally about you, Soriana. And there I named it Bursting Femininity / Queen Diagonal. And this sums up the whole problem that I'm confronted with there. And now we gotta be, gotta backpedal also a little from yesterday, of course, zurückrudern, nice word in German, zurückrudern, you can annotate that, because when you made a statement, like politicians do that all the time also, made a statement and then next day tell, oh no, it wasn't meant this way, there was a big shitstorm on social media, so therefore you have to backpedal or zurückrudern, like on a river, you go, you're going with the stream, but then, oh no, you missed something, missed maybe a spot or bifurcation, Abzweigung, and there you have to backpedal, you have to, yeah, pull the rows to get back there in the river. And with yesterday, yeah, feels like have to backpedal maybe a little, because this feels then a little unimaginable, this triangular constellation, and I just invite you, Soriana, that of course I'd be happy to have coffee with you any day, alone with you or also with Lilia, and I think, yeah, this would be great to start it off like this and to not think so much about this erotic and love elements or condiments that might also be part of our imaginative world, but it's simply nice to get to know each other a little more, and I just want to start and dive into this relationship or getting to know each other with Lilia now very intensively. And yeah, this trio triangular thing is a very hard thing to conceptualize in this reactionary society. Therefore, we gotta take it slow, and we can all think about it. I mean, if you even want to think about it, and then after a couple of months, maybe can't come to a conclusion whether this would be something possible or not. But for now, I just feel this. Yeah, I want you, Lilia, and get to know you wherever. Could be under the bed cover, or could be in any sense making some discoveries. Not there, but in the outer world there in Stuttgart, walking down the huge park at the train station, the Schlossgarten. And there are all kinds of parks, like the Killesberg Park, or then there's also Trümmerhaufen Berg, or where they piled up all the wrecked parts from World War II, well, the houses that were falling down and so on. And they piled this up somehow there on the top, and there I find it a cute place. And then, yeah, this I think would be adequate, because you have to get to know the city and the feeling of the culture that you're now living in, and maybe you want to stay even a little longer. And we don't even have to think about this, these paradoxical elements, ingredients in our love potion or our friendship potion. And I'm really talking in earnest to you here, that, yeah, it's totally like this. On one hand, it's pleasant to keep on going with this neurotic game, but on the other hand, it's also now summer and would be nice to explore a lot of places outside with you, because it's always more fun with other people, and you're this one snowflake that I feel an isomorphy, like there is a ribbon between us, a ribbon, a bond, of course, a tie, and this tie is so strong, Lydia. I know that it gets even stronger by your subtle provocations, like not greeting me in the morning. And I know, Lilia, that you also like me somehow. And I like you also a lot, and can't even put a number on it or tell you how much even. It's impossible. Yeah. And then, Floriana, I was talking about you. Because, yeah, sexuality is so difficult. You don't know. And this was also these fights that grifted me, or put me under pressure with my ex-girlfriend about polyamory, how it's possible to love several people. And therefore I also felt like compelled to make an argument here, but it's not an artificial argument here about you, Sorian. It's natural that, yeah, that you can feel that this somehow, this person that you're confronted with, and that it's so pleasant to even see only the legs below the desk, but even more pleasant to look you in the face, of course, in the eyes, like we didn't do now for some time. And yeah, there can be this feeling, but it doesn't mean you have to fall in love, it doesn't mean you have to have sex or anything. But of course, what I perceive is that it blocks this possibility of even talking, and that is lamentable. Therefore I have to be very explicit here and say, yeah, all this is present, and there might be even greater possibilities for the future present for us to get to know each other, be curious and exploring each other, or exploring this love trio. That would be a totally different potion and a new constellation, like a star constellation never seen before, and bringing up also new traits and characteristics in our own three individualities that are not seen in other relationships, maybe in other situations where we are not in this. And yeah, this of course reminds me then of this one time we were sitting there and talking about the vacation. In November, you told me about your vacation in Switzerland, and I said I traveled to Athens. Probably already mentioned this, of course. And I just wanted this moment to never end and to always be like this with you girls, and made me feel like you're the most important man in the world, and I don't want any colleague to come by. I want to be the only one for you, being caught up and soaked up by you, your eyes nailing me. And yeah, this I felt back then with you, that it's maybe a very special constellation. There, with three persons, it's always different again than with two persons. It's never completely the same. But this is logical then for all individuals. But are we so individualistic today? Or don't we rather tend to become all similar and the same? I mean, the same. Assimilated persons that are like, just want to adjust and fit into the system, because it's so brutal, the system where you have to fight to survive. So brutal in Ukraine, of course, now, the war with people dying there and horrible circumstances now, this offensive from Zelensky that wasn't so successful. But yeah, let's not think about this, just that this is this outer world which is very toxic. And yeah, somehow that gotta be created, a safe place, safe space in love or somewhere, somehow. So unique, and you have to be unique, but you never get to it. You're so individualistic, and if something goes wrong, it's never the fault of the state or of society, but of your own individual choices, because it's always like this in liberalism. All the guilt and feeling of incompleteness is laid off and put onto the shoulders of the individuals, because it makes sense in a way. The bourgeois world is that individualistic. When you have a firm and have your capital that attracts and enslaves all the workers to produce for the firm, for the capital, new values, then you really can be that individualistic, or simply then this is your task to be on the market and look after this, that your product, the healthiness of your firm is excellent and is on a stop. But this world, this society is then built after this example of the bourgeois, but it's not fitting for the majority of people living in it, and it's so paradoxical, so absurd, therefore, that we're all somehow squeezed into this, gepresst or eingequetscht. We're squeezed into the system that doesn't even fit or needs squeeze, pressed into it. Yeah, and therefore you maybe want to sabotage yourself. You don't even want to think about sex, because this is so vulgar, and especially as a man, as we read in Ephailus two episodes ago, that it has something to do with competition and winning against other men. If you feel like this, oh no, this is so gross, why? This is so hurtful to think that this is a great prize a woman you can achieve, and of course would be so great to hold the hand of a woman, but I don't want to fight, I don't have to compete this way. And yeah, therefore now maybe you want to sabotage yourself like I experienced. Like I said, I never could develop my writing talents, at least not until I started working at this firm 3 years ago, and also podcasting. I also had the plan already for, had this plan for years to start a podcast, but didn't do it thoroughly and podcasting regularly until 2020, when the pandemic started, and when also my life took off, like was procreating like the virus, or was spreading. Yeah, my mental powers were spreading, also dispersing, broadcasting. Yeah, broadcast. And yeah, this then just mentioned this because this sabotaging then has also to do something with the body, that it's very hurtful to think that other people might look at our bodies and judge us. And of course I also look at the bodies and somehow judge. I mean, you can't avoid this, that you think this about someone. I think, like, yeah, for men it's a big problem to lose their hair, and also I, like, losing a little my hair. And then you think about, yeah, what is my state in this competition? Well, there are other men, they have all their hair, but, well, there are also other ones that are really, yeah, getting bald and therefore in a worse position than I. And you never can avoid this kind of competitive looks. I mean, we're all entrapped in this liberal market society, and therefore also shouldn't feel guilty for it. But the thing is that for you girls, I think, of course, it's worse than, because, yeah, we have all these inequalities, unequal scales and measuring units for men and women. Like I mentioned, you have to shave your legs, and this is so unfair. And then, yeah, that for you this then feels probably even worse than a man could be taxating you, assessing you. But I mean, what can we really do? It's just this problem that I'm describing here, that in a way, yeah, you also want to enjoy the beauty of other people, and it's good therefore to look. Like, I don't even dare sometimes to look, also at you too, especially nowadays. But it should be normal to enjoy the body shapes and not be judging, or yeah, not feeling like this could accommodate. But of course it's difficult, and can't even get to the point that just you maybe feel like Robert Faller wrote that young girls often, or well, in larger portions develop these eating disorders, and something he wrote about might have to do with the image of your own body, that you don't want to become a full grown-up adult being, a person that is then also sexualized. You want to run away from this field of sexuality because it feels so accommodating. And this is very, very crucial to understand that Faller's point there is, we always tend to explain this eating disorders, like anorexia, tend to explain it like with yeah, you want to be like the models, like these beauty models, fashion models, and they are so skinny therefore. But no, it's the other way around. You don't want to be such a hot person, have such an attractive body, but you want to not take part simply in this world. And this is also what I felt, and also I had some problems there with, I don't know, with eating. In my time in university, at least, it felt like I was also developing there some kind of disorder, but now feels like this with entering into the real world, there you sign the contract, like I said last time, everything's fine now, it also solves these other problems. And yeah, that you don't want to become a sexualized individual and be like your mother or like your father. And yeah, and when I'm talking here about women's bodies, it's in a kind of way universalistic. It's this fraternizing we read about in Eva Illus. Fraternize or solidarity has to do with sexuality, but more for men. But it doesn't have to be this way. I mean, of course, in German, two episodes ago at the end, I talked German and was talking about the bodies of these participants in yoga class, where I always go on Thursdays. And that is somehow challenging to be there and, yeah, somehow enjoying those other bodies, but in a way it's also hurting. Or, yeah, you think like, oh, what have I achieved with my life? I mean, I didn't have sex with so many girls, and why am I losing out in this competition against other men? And they could just see a woman like this besides them and start talking to her immediately, maybe after the class, talking to her, inviting her to something, drink a coffee, and they would be able to do this, but I'm not as a man. And something about this, I think, this is not the whole explanation, but that it's ambivalent, it's pleasant, but also unpleasant. And concerning this, we could play a great song that talks exactly about this crystal line. It's called, talks about, yeah, it's always pleasant or unpleasant, isn't it? Or is there maybe something in between? This is the question that surges in one of the verses there. It's raining really heavily. Oh, I forgot my towel outside, I think, but... Well, I think we can leave it until tomorrow. Oh, it's really a heavy rain that is fecundating, fertilizing the earth, and it was really needed. Like those last maybe 4 or 5 weeks, there wasn't even rain, or at least not that much. It already rained yesterday to a certain extent, but wow, now it seems like die Schleusen des Himmels haben sich geöffnet. I don't know if I mentioned this, that there is a beautiful saying in Argentinian, in Argentinian Spanish, that is like a hook-up line that you could use as a man to say the gateways of heaven must have opened because an angel is standing right in front of me. And, oh, sorry, sounds so cheesy, I can't even. Say. Oof. Sorry. Swallowed something. Some of my mate. Yes, Argentinian product. Las esclusas del cielo se abrieron. Because, yeah, this you also can say when it rains, die Schleusen des Himmels, the gateways of heaven have opened up. So, now I think I have finalized this point, but it's very important, it's about the unique person and the body, and because, yeah, I feel you girls, I must say this to you, that I want to be compassive and fond with you, but I fear I could be putting too much pressure on you, especially you, Lilia, could feel now in a competition with Zoriana and under pressure and being rivals. And Zoriana, she told me in December that somehow you two had become very close friends, but I somehow and the last time came to question this, or at least ask myself this question, whether my podcast or my whole behavior, but I mean, okay, in the office I don't even talk to you nowadays, so what is this behavior? Well, of ignoring being. That this could have, maybe have also put you into a uncomfortable position as these two friends that you are. And I'm really sorry for this. The relationship between you two, I don't know how it is. You talk sometimes there at work, but I also think that it's great, of course, that you can give each other some company. You're alone in a foreign country, but it's normal to not be that close friends. And I also always like to mention this in my podcast in German, like I don't want even a lot of friends, because earlier in my youth I felt so under pressure. Pressured from my parents, who told me I should be more sociable person or speak more, because at that time I didn't want to talk to my classmates. But I don't know, it started when I was about 11, and I entered into the gymnasium, because this is also the big fraction here in the German school system, that you have the elementary school where everybody is invited, but then after only 4 years, at the age of 10, you have to decide if you're good enough. Will the teachers decide, and the parents also, if you can enter the gymnasium, which is the highest class school, the highest possible thing, institution. And then there's Realschule, which is in the middle, and then there's Hauptschule, which is really for, well, they're mostly kids from difficult backgrounds, and also migrant kids. And this is so, I mean, this is really segregation, like separating people, and also racist, because of course these people from migrant families then have less chances to learn, to even get these learning materials and books bought from their parents and have a nice surrounding at home, like having a desk to learn and study. And so obvious that this is also the racism encrypted into this system, and it's really one of a kind system in Germany with these three schools. I don't know if it's in any country like this, but it's also been changed, always reforms, but I don't know, I just don't even, of course, read newspaper, but I still think that it's in place like this today. But of course, each Bundesland has its own rules, because it has, in politics, certain fields of politics are the domain of the provinces of the Bundesländer, like Baden-Württemberg or Bayern, which you wore this pullover, Soriana, with the colors and the muster of the flag of Bayern. So each Bundesland is different there, and I only wanted to look up, because I have a dictionary here that I bought to broaden my vocabulary. Wort, Schatz, the treasure of words. I wanted to look for a synonym for difficult, because I'm always talking about difficult subjects here in the podcast, and I think this one word is not enough to describe the whole spectrum of variations of possible aromas or fragrances of difficulty. Laborious, strenuous, arduous, hard, tough, demanding, punishing, grueling, backbreaking, exhausting, tiring. Well, I think backbreaking, this one somehow sticks to me. Gotta put a marker here. Backbreaking, yeah. Then hard, complicated, complex, puzzling, perplexing, baffling, problematic, thorny, ticklish. Troublesome, tiresome, trying, exasperating, awkward, demanding, contrary, recalcitrant, uncooperative, fuzzy. Well, this is a lot. I mean, backbreaking, arduous, it's an arduous task. Perplexing. This is what you do to me, you girls. You're so perplexing. And perplex is a nice word also in German. Got the same meaning in English, I guess. And so, yeah, I don't know, you two girls. It's also none of my business to interfere here. I'm just speculating what is your real relationship, and it doesn't matter. You don't have to tell me anything, and I don't want to be like this. Like I said, yeah, it's also good to keep secrets. This is Robert Faller's point always. In a relationship, you don't have to tell each other everything about your life, and this is maybe the mistake that I'm committing here, but somehow, yeah, it's my automatism podcasting. I really go on and on, and yeah, as a kid, how could I prohibit these words and sentences flowing out? I mean, somehow I would have to clog or block or plug somehow. Yeah, but I can't put a limit to it. So you, Lilia, only care about you in a certain way. Yes, Oriana, you are a dear co-worker to me, but should really keep it for now, at least in these, yeah, realms where we can feel not so under pressure, so that we can hopefully someday talk again and feel this, what I felt or you felt also maybe, that it's simply so pleasant and full of lust to talk and to see each other. So, but we only care about you, Lilia, and this rebel that you are, because I think you wore a t-shirt that also stated something about a rebellion. And yeah, therefore I like you so much, because you're a rebellious girl. Yeah, and I think you wore a piercing I didn't see before, but I didn't even dare to look that closely on Wednesday. So yeah, but I thought, wow. Well, of course I was so nervous after publishing number 170. And thought, well, but yeah, maybe this was a reaction to my podcast, you showing me that you also can be rebellious. I find it nice, of course, if you like to wear this. But then I'm not even sure what I saw there, because I didn't dare to look that closely, and you directed your eyes at me when you were there at the window. And I was looking at you, and I thought that, yeah, maybe this time you really had to look at me, or this day you wanted to, because you wanted to be sure, or at least give me the sign, or somehow you didn't want me to escape you into this direction of Zorian, because this text about the starfish was, well, talking mostly about Zoriana, and although you're the most important person to me, Lilia, I only wrote there some lines about you at the end and at the beginning, but yeah, it has to do with the material impression that you confronted to this person, and your Zoriana is always there somehow in my Sichtfeld, in the field where what you see. In the field of you, so therefore it's somehow natural it had to be treated this way. It's all about the material base of life and essential sensitive or sensual perceptions. But then the next day you maybe felt like, yeah, this can't be. You had to at least come over to the other side so that I could see you and yeah, to remind me that you're still there. But I don't know, maybe I'm interpreting this totally wrong. And but Lilia, you know that you don't have to worry. Yeah, I mean, because yeah, this is all teasing, because you're also teasing me, teasing each other with you. I feel this is a game and hopefully not so hurting for you, but yeah, I suspect that it's more hurting for you. And I'm sorry, really sorry for this. And but yeah, you also, you started this game like with your messages on Christmas, yeah, in a way. I wrote these long messages, but I mean, yeah, you then were like this, telling me that you were not even interested in talking anymore. And okay, I gotta take this serious. As I said, it has to do, well, of course, yeah, it has to do with all the cultural situation here in Germany. Also talk about sexual harassment, and this, that, or at least for me, it isn't such a topic that you can just easily step over and say, well, okay, but she didn't mean it this way. No, although I know or suspect that you didn't mean it, but still, if you write it, it's okay for me, and then you have to take a step or take it back or say something to me, then okay, we can get past this. But in this phase, yeah, I feel like this can't be my role to now come to you. Simply can't be. And okay, I wrote about this all in the show notes, also about Rammstein, this case, allegations against this lead singer of this band. And I don't want to talk about this whole unpleasing topics here, because it's always nice to also handle some topics in the show notes and that are like fostering my discourse but are not really part of it. Just want to mention about Rammstein that they are very popular in Ukraine, told me my roommates. Really popular, like, yeah. And I told them that, or they asked, why are they not so popular in Germany? And I said, well, I don't even know, but they're somehow seen as a Nazi band also. But why? He said to me, roommateer, they clearly aren't. And I said, oh, well, I don't even know their songs. But then I read something about, I don't know, goes back to the 90s, where there was some song, some misinterpretation, and after that they were somehow marked as Nazis. But they, yeah, distanced themselves. And now there are these allegations about, yeah, sexual violence, but it all has to be investigated. I don't want to say anything more here, because I felt like, yeah, in the show notes, this is intense stuff, and I don't want this so much to interfere in our relationship, Lydia, because I feel, yeah, this is really a hurtful environment, especially for young people to grow up. I mean, even more hurtful than in such a country like Germany, where there's all this, well, all this discussion about gender topics, trans and queer and feminism. And this all, well, has a point, but in this bourgeois society, it's not really helping the mass of the people, and it's really blocking all our possibilities of joy, our imaginations, and our courage. Courage to enter the realms of love. And I don't want this to be somehow interfering, therefore I also felt like, yeah, this whole talk this whole, well, political debates, also in Eva Illus' book, it somehow should be have to leave it aside, or somehow also create a path around it. Fortitude is like bravery. Just some words I annotated here to the better vocabulary. So we don't even have the fortitude to think about sex today. And this is what I told my colleague, our male colleague there, to whom I always go out to the lunch break. And yeah, it seems like, I don't know, I mean, I don't even know if he likes it, but he's a silent guy like me, and therefore just tell him something that occurs to me about my podcast, about this difficult, this strenuous situation with these girls. But he said to me he didn't even listen, but also a little critical, the same way, ex-girlfriend. She also said she didn't listen, but I'm somehow thinking, yeah, I don't really believe that you're not interested in this, and you might have listened. But it's, of course, none of my business. You can listen or not listen, all of my listeners or potential listeners. I don't care. Or, yeah, you can tell me, of course, I'd be glad to hear your thoughts, but don't have to. And somehow I told him this on Thursday, that sex as a whole becomes a very dark, strenuous, uneasy topic that is shined on by a very gloomy light. Gloomy light is close to being in the criminal area, because it's always about criminal acts when you hear or read about it in the media, or it's about pornography, and it's about this pop stars wearing these tight sexy outfits, or even pornography. Even in the newspaper, in the biggest build, there used to be always naked women or women with a bare breast. It's always somehow part of it, but in such a flashy way, garish. This is also what Robert Pfaller says, dazzling, that this all is too loud and sharp, like we're bombarded with from the society with sex, but only in the superstructure, in the media, and in all we hear and read and think then, but it can't get resolved, and we don't get real sex in our lives, and this creates a very stressful situation, of course. And okay, now gotta move on. Let's play a song. I have one more thing to say. Yesterday I was talking about Melissa, because this was the name of this girl I met in the bakery, and this was 2 years ago, 2 months before I met my first girlfriend. And somehow, yeah, I've felt like, and she was also singularly beautiful, and therefore I felt nervous, but felt like, why not try it? I mean, yeah, I don't even know how beautiful am I to women, but why not even try it? Wow, she was really, I don't know, I suspected she was from Spain or Italy, because I had heard her talking with another co-worker there at the bakery that I thought was her mother, because yeah, they seem to be very close, also resembling each other in their semblance, their faces. And but they were talking then in Spanish. I thought, well, from Spain or from South America. And yeah, could have asked her about this, of course, or just started to speak in Spanish, of course, but this would be too brazen for me, and therefore I simply asked her for her name. And this is what I mentioned yesterday, I think, that then she defiantly, well, she told me her name, and this was so great. Felt like also an achievement. She said, yeah, Melissa, aber warum? Warum? And I got weak knees and said, ah, nur so, and left. And yeah, I never saw her, or just a couple of times after that, but it felt not so good, a bitter experience maybe, but again, it's, I like to take it slow and maybe even to a point where it all gets frozen and this love possibility can't even move forward. But why move so rapidly? This is the whole point. And the point I wanted to make today is simply that after that, it got clear to me that, yeah, maybe somehow, in a way, I really had achieved everything I wanted to achieve in this one situation. Of course, it'd be nice to say, yeah, let's have a date, let's be friends or even lovers. But this is so much to imagine. I can't, and this has to do always this competition, this what Eva Illos described with male autonomy and being rewarded and recognized as a real man or isn't finally, you did it, you found someone, you're successful being in this society, you have the greatest good. Nothing could be that good, even a Russian oligarch. I mean, he can buy love, but you can't force someone to actually love you, and therefore, even they don't have access, even the capitalists with all their billions don't have access to this highest good. This is love and sex, relationship and or bond. But my point here is that for me it was enough, because I just realized this then afterward, that I just wanted to write more about her. Well, in my diaries, always writing. This was the time when I was beginning to write really extensive diaries, like sometimes 30 pages on my computer. Of course, don't write so much by hand, but it's also nice to write by hand. But I was writing there sometimes, especially at this phase where I was so excited for my podcast really taking off in that time, and then looking for a girlfriend, and wow, I wrote 50 pages or sometimes even 60, 70 in 1 month. And this was only my diary, of course. I have also other literature works. But nowadays I write a little less of diaries and try to direct my efforts really into the real, well, prose or poetry, also a theoretical work field. But she, this girl, I mean, also that she was too beautiful in a way. I mean, don't want to compare to you, Zoriana, but she was a lot like you, and don't want to say she was more beautiful, no, this never, but just that she was different in a way, and I don't know how to describe it, but yeah, but that was also, she had large breasts, and this whole feminine shapes then also feel like, whoa, intimidating for men. But this is the point I wanted to make. I didn't get to this point. Feels intimidating, but you gotta think. Well, yeah, it's always this ambivalent, two-faced or double-knifed feeling, and I don't wanna be this way fraternizing, solidarizing with other men over female bodies. Because it has to be universalistic. Also, a woman could hear my speech here and say, yeah, it's the same feeling with men when I see their shapes, their manly shoulders or breasts and arms, and I see it and it's somehow too much, or too masculine forms, and it somehow blocks you also and makes you inhibited in a conversation. And this is the point, that it has to stop. This thinking about fraternization as being restricted to one gender or to specific group of people who identify with this gender, being male, brings you into this position to have this privilege to be able to talk about girls and their bodies and feel like this way you can also connect to other men, because they also have these impressions, sensations and problems that arise from it. But I think the problem is the same for all of us, no matter men, women or diverse trans people, that seeing another person you could feel really aroused, excited by, but what to do, how How can you even open your mouth when it feels like you want to be paralyzed and shaken and be split in half by that lightning? Like, yeah, it's always a lightning, and I use this word blizzard because I confounded, mix it up with Blitz in German, which is lightning. But Soriana, for you, blizzard is also very fitting because, of course, you're very pale, your skin is somehow unexplainable color, and this has a lot to do with a blizzard, which is a Schneesturm. You might have this in Ukraine or Russia, a storm of snow. I don't think this exists here in Germany. We don't have so much snow. And yeah, with this, one more thing, that the skin of my Peruvian ex-girlfriend, of course, was different. And she was from a different race. And this is what I forgot to mention yesterday. Of course, we shouldn't use race and racism in political fights, and should fight back racism, but in love it could be something, well, not racism, but simply to see the difference of races. And in a way this is then maybe also racism, tender racism, but that you, it shouldn't be something bad to think that it's somehow different, and it's lustful, it's exciting to get to know a differently shaped and differently colored body, and therefore it's something erotic to have, to be loving a person from a different race, but also from your same race. I feel you Ukrainian girls are, of course, of the same race like I am. This whole thing doesn't make sense, so ridiculous. What Hitler and the Nazis thought, that the people in the East, the Soviets were Untermenschen, were people below the German standard. And even though we look that similar, yeah, but it was purely ideological, delusional concept, of course. And yeah, race, of course, we shouldn't define it that. It's impossible to define because we're all different in our genetics, also in our outer appearance. But I just, yeah, like this outer appearance, look at this and say it's beautiful to love someone who is looking like me, like you are, Lilia. We share many characteristics and feel like we're the same. But it's also nice to love someone who is different. And yeah. And this, explains the whole thing about polyamory, that why should you restrict yourself to one person if you feel like you have to? At least try. You don't have to love 100 people, because this is impossible to handle then also emotionally. It wouldn't be love, it would just feel like a messy, like an accumulation of sex, maybe just because of this competition and being able to brag, or it simply could foster and pump up your self-esteem. But with some people, I mean 2 or 3, it should be natural, or could be, because you feel you shouldn't be forced to make a choice to say, well, this girl from South America is somehow a piece for me that can complete me. But then this girl from Eastern Europe also is an incomparably valuable piece for me. And yeah, with this, I gotta wrap it up, at least for now, before we play a song. And only gotta sharpen that point again about Melissa, this girl in the bakery. She was so feminine and round, this feminine radiance, and she then was, I mean, I was happy with this after this, just being able to write your name. Somehow, yeah, I could have or should have done more, asked more for a date. But I mean, maybe this is just a difficult point I'm getting to here to explain to you, Lilia, that I want to lure you, tell you that you have to come to me. You have to also seduce me. Because for me, somehow, it's also enough to only be writing about a girl and podcasting about her. And yeah, just to know her name is enough. And just that you can put this name on her, and then I could, yeah, go on and on. And maybe after half a year writing about this girl, Melissa, I would have or would have felt like I should take the next step. But this, of course, then didn't come to be because of my new relationship. But this is what I was thinking, that as men you always feel under pressure, like, yeah, you have to have sex, have to have a girlfriend. But I also want to rebel. I don't want to be part of this world, like I said earlier, about the bodies and this eating disorders. You don't want to be like this, entering the adult world when there's real talk and real assets being traded, like these assets, houses and stuff, mortgages to pay your house, and also sex, and these bodies get traded somehow. We're all part of the sexual market, and this feels very stressing and hurtful. And so yeah, this I wanted to make clear to you, that as I wrote in this Telegram message, would be also nice to talk to you simply about database tables and their performance. And yeah, like you said, let's talk about work, which didn't make sense to me because we never talked about work so much. We don't work on the same project. But yeah, if that's your proposal, I'd be happy to do that. And this is my point, that maybe, yeah, you feel that I have to come up with something, come to you, so that you can make your judgment and react to my proposals. But I simply propose to you that, yeah, in a way I'm really verschossen into you. I'm into you, but this delusional love, this paradoxical love I'm living, is so intense that it feels okay. We can take it slow and we can talk about this or that and only about work if you want, and I'm not taking any step. And yeah, I mean, this is this stubborn game, but I know we should take the steps, shouldn't we? Should. And having said all this, I worked down my list here, but I still have more annotated. But with this, it's really high time we play a song. A song, yeah. Crystal Line is this song I mentioned. Yeah, let's play this and have fun with this song.
Ooh. call this pleasant or unpleasant? Or aren't these the right words? Oh, I'm not.
So this was this song, I Want to Hurt You and Want to Wreck You. It's not rape you, as I first understood when I heard this song. No, it's wreck, like a wrecking ball. It's also this song by Miley Cyrus, I think. And I want to be the one that hurts you, Lilia, with you. Got this feeling, I'll say, romantically, or it's natural in love, but now that you felt like you wanted to hurt me with your words on Christmas, and you blocked me now, and therefore gotta give you this back tenderly, and also, yeah. Could all be wiped out, maybe, once we find together, finally find the way to establish a rhetorical connection again, communicative connection. And I think once that happens, any bad feeling that could have been will definitely vanish. And now I want to say that I want to tell you a couple more things. Maybe I can read even my poetry, German poem, but let's take our time. Betriebsrat is like a union. I mentioned this yesterday, didn't I? Can't remember that correctly. But I think I said something about wanting to found this kind of a union. And yeah, it would be an interesting possibility to talk to all the workers on Wednesday, when I think there is this meeting again, get together of all the employees. But then I thought about you, Lilia, that you would be looking at me and you would then see again this great man who's stepping up, who's giving a speech and attacking, even being confrontative to the boss, because of course that's what it is all about, developing class consciousness for the workers, so that they in the first place get to know that they're in an antagonistic position and have to fight back against the management, to have to unite to look after our own interests as workers and not the interests of the firm. And yeah, but I don't want to be so impressing for you, and therefore I think it can wait until the next quarter, next meeting, or only if you would like to support me, yeah, maybe we could give a speech together. You could come and I don't know how good your German is, but we can do it in English so that everyone can understand. And yeah, unite the proletarians of the world, or at least of our company. And so I'm in an explosive situation because I feel I'm on top of myself. I mean, this is top-notch mood and situation. I mean, I'm working such a lot on my podcast and also on my writings, and this Zori and Lily stuff I mentioned, it's kind of a novel, but now it developed more into a poetry, really long poem. This could be something real. It could be, yeah, the one thing I want to work now, and I just want to find something. As I said, don't want this fame, but just that I have something, could create something that I could give to you, and maybe you'd like to read Lilia, and also my ex-girlfriend, and that to you, Zoriana, that you are sitting there and somehow just talking to you feels like, well, it's a step you have to get past these inner boundaries and trenches, walls, so that you can really, yeah, the trench, like in the war, also there are trenches, but you have to get past this so you can attack the other one or talk to them. And it always feels like a war also when you start to talk. You don't want to, I mean, you invade another country, maybe your words invading this other person. You really have to think about it. Oh man, what can I say? What do I have to say? But you can't even know it before you start to speak. There are all kinds of dazzling memories or creative ideas pop up, but it has to be produced in the act of speaking. It can't come out just by thinking. And this is the whole paradox, the problem we're confronted with. And Zoriana, what I wrote just in this diary, read in number 171, that you are, this reward, just talking to you is a reward for all my writing, because I feel writing gives me security, self-esteem, and so I also can talk to girls and be like this, yeah, and therefore this is enough of a reward. I don't need any financial reward, because it's better to be a worker there, centered and connected to the working class, intermingled, planted there like these other plants, like the other workers, and don't want to be that exceptional standing outside this field of proletarians as a writer, as a full-time writer. And it has to be this way that I explained yesterday. At the gates of the firm, the competition ends, and there you get to know the basic fact about life, that you have to work together in order to produce something. And this fact, of course, is hidden by the bourgeois ideology. Therefore, they create us as these individuals who only look for their own interests and have to fight against these others. Suspicious, and therefore, so there this ends, and therefore it's a pleasant and healthy experience. I don't want to leave behind right now. Also, of course, yeah, my work, I'm not that famous yet, and if I don't want to publish in this way, then it would be difficult to become rich enough to be independent from this labor. But yeah, with publishing, I mean, it's enough that you could read, also you, Zoriana, but I don't know if you like to read so much and don't have to. Just that Lilia could read, and my ex-girlfriend, and this would then be the reward of my work, and other people, they can maybe wait. They don't have to know all right now. I can have to save my capital, my writings, have to keep it all together and only give it to persons I feel really close to. And this is explosive, I annotate it here, because this Lily and Zori work, yeah, feels not like, well, but I mean, okay, it made me realize that maybe, yeah, I want to write poetry, is maybe better. I discovered this in Michel Houellebecq, a French writer I admire a lot, that I didn't even read poetry, but when I read his, first I read his novels, of course, famous novelist, but then I read this and then I thought, well, he's also taking poetry very serious and saying that it's more important than novels. I could believe this at first, but now I'm slowly beginning to realize there might be something to it. Also, Roberto Bolaño, the Chilean writer, also he started as a poet and didn't get that famous until he was in his, I don't know, 30s and 40s. And living in Spain, he had to emigrate because of this fascist coup in Chile, backed by the US in 1973. And this, with this fascist regime of Pinochet instituted there, he fled to Mexico, and there was a poet and was participating in these left-wing artistical groups, also politically, but as a poet simply. And then he emigrated to Spain, began to write prose and novels there, and then became famous for it. But also for him, it seems like poetry is the real thing, the main thing, and writing novels is only something that you do for a living. You have to do because the public demands it. The public doesn't want to read that much poetry. And his poetry is a little weird. I mean, I don't like Bolaño's poetry so much as Houellebecq's, because Bolaño's is more like not poetry but prose, at least written like in this, like a normal text, written not that condensed as poetry, not that tight, but yeah, these two maybe are the main writers for me, or right now role models. Of course, your geschmack, your preferences always change over the past life, and maybe won't be forever, but right now I feel flavor, taste might be changing through the course of my life, but now, right now I feel these two are the most important, or have given me the most insight and inspiration in literature. Michel Houellebecq and Roberto Bolaño. I wanted to read something from Houellebecq also, but we have to move on, get to the point. So, this might be real work, I said about Lily and Zori, but what is the real work? I mean, at least love, material love, maybe should be the real work, and there should be some ethics, maybe in love, that you say, well, what is the adequate behavior in front of this other person? And I don't know, Lilia, I mean, yeah, I have to find it out. I want to hear from you. Maybe this was so hurtful, everything. But, yeah, I just want you to know that this is more important to love you, really, materially, than my writings. And although writing feels at times so intense, like sex or better, but this is not the real life. This also, like I wrote in a political text published in the show notes of number 159 about imperialism. I published this in German, and there I wrote that to my lovers, I sent them this message that, yeah, I'm a revolutionary and imagining the society that would be possible. And you women have to become like this, also imaginative and also crazy a little, because today I feel it's more men that are crazy and women that are more realist and pulling us down again, auf den Teppich runterholen, or pulling us down to earth again. But it can't be this way, because when you look at this, it's not acceptable, the state of the world, that in Peru or in Ukraine it's not possible to find a good job, the labor market is a disaster, as you told me, Lilia, how hard it is to find a job, and also for my ex-girlfriend was not an option to stay there in Peru, because it's such a mess, although she had good education there as a jurisprudence girl, as a lawyer, but so much corruption, and working there was then not what she wanted to do. But this cannot be this way, that only in some imperialist countries there are dignified working conditions and the working class at least has some can participate from the economic fruits of the labor. And in other countries, yeah, you have to work that hard in this competition and are simply glad that you even have a job and don't belong to this plebeian masses that are somehow superfluous, like also in Germany we have them, but it's, in every country it's, but it's on a different level here. And but this can't be this way, and therefore I tell you women this, especially to you, my foreign lovers that come from other countries, that you have to also be this imaginative, and that women have to construct the world of tomorrow, and therefore have to encourage you. But I mean, okay, I'm like a dreamer. And gotta tell you, revolution would be the best outcome. We had a chance to establish a socialist state and a rule guided by Marxist principles and ruling, so trying to construct a society out of this, which would be really dazzling task. Backbreaking, yeah. Had to work really hard, like Stalin and Lenin did back then. But Lenin maybe worked too hard. I mean, I don't know, I didn't study that thoroughly in history, but at least he died then furious after the revolution. And I don't know from what cause, maybe it was purely physical, but you gotta think, when you overwork, it also has an effect on your body. And therefore, maybe you also have to take it slow, especially as a revolutionary. And first, be concerned about your own health and about your body and your lovers or your love, the love bonds that you create, because this will then stabilize and give you power for the rest of your life. And just this, what I wrote in the text was then, I mean, okay, the revolution would be the optimal outcome and would be better to live in this new society. But even if it's not possible, if we stay in this reactionary society and we somehow fail as communists to develop these practical steps, then even then, I mean, the life with you, Lydia, or with you, my lovers, my ex-girlfriend also, would be so much greater than life alone, of course, and maybe even would be greater than this revolution. I mean, I don't know, but simply with you, anything would be perfect and would feel like we have our island of happiness in this gloomy world. But yeah, we have to live it, and it's not our fault that capitalism is so hard to beat and hard to bring down, but we can also live our lives here inside the system. And with you, it's always a very, very, intense, very profound feeling of that everything is in order, everything is as it should be, just when you look at me, and that rounds up this point, I guess. So yeah, this is this ethics, but I don't know what to say. Also have to take care of my work, of my podcasts and writings, because it fosters my mental stability, supports that my harmony and peace of mind. As my ex-girlfriend used to say, for her, peace of mind was very important. For you, Lilia, I would construct castles or cities or anything. Put you on the top, on a majestic throne, or conquer a kingdom for you. Yeah. Unpretentiously, candidly wanted to bring this out here, wrote this down. I think it's clear. It's, doesn't need to add anything. Yeah. Gotta draw to finalization soon, but let me mention one more point before we dive into the closing chapter. Well, I already touched this difficult moral, or I don't know, political question about the people there now dying, the soldiers in Ukraine, the Russian soldiers, and also Ukrainians in this senseless war, and that what is our role here in Europe. Of course, we should, I mean, you girls were then part, of course, of this Zelensky narrative and the mainstream narrative and view in Ukraine, that you said there mustn't be peace talks, we have to keep on fighting because Russia then would, if we talked about peace, they would keep this land, and this is not an option, this can't be the real. And yeah, I understand you also that we're all formed by the society that surrounds us and the superstructure, the media, and we can't really break out. Our thoughts are wrapped in this. And just one thing that we're all guilty, also I, am I talking here, you can't be not part of this world. You have to get out in this world, speak up, but then you already become guilty. There you become also evil. This is what Malenkun, the great communist writer, writes, referring also to Hegel, the German philosopher, that die schöne Seele, the beautiful soul, one is a type of person or a stage of a development phase of your personality that we all go through sometimes. It's not about this or that person, it's about all humans share these basic laws of mental development. This is what Hegel points at. And the schöne Seele, the beautiful soul, wants to stay inside and say, oh yeah, the world is so bad outside, and I'm here inside commenting on it, like on social media. This is what Kuhn then analyzes, this is the place where today the beautiful souls gather to let out all their hatred or disgust with this world and say, oh, I'm so clean and I'm beautiful. My soul is somehow kept clean inside this dirty world, but yeah, there's so many dirty stains, and just have to comment about it. Just, it's so absurd, he says, that this whole behavior then points at not wanting to become a part of the real world, but in the act of writing, publishing it as a tweet, you already become part of this. You are already acting, also giving credit to this person you're commenting, or this war, when you're talking about Putin, already affirming their position, and you're also becoming evil, just like the persons you're talking or complaining about. And this is so great what he writes, that these people, the beautiful souls, they like to go on a shopping tour through a shopping mall, and then be confronted with some behavior they don't like. Of course, there's always these cultural questions, gender questions also. I don't know what people get so angry about today, because of course I try to keep it a little from myself and filter, also be only in my communist bubble there on Twitter. But people then get angry, but they don't even dare to talk to someone and point out what's causing all the anger, why they are not happy with this action or behavior that the other one displays. But they simply accept it and feel like too weak to even speak up, to talk back, or to do something about it, about the thing that's so nasty for them. And then they come home from this shopping tour and log into social media, and there they let off all this anger and say, oh, this just happened to me, and this is so incredible, I can't believe it, this world, this society is so messed up. And this is the paradoxical thing then, that you feel like you're not acting, you're outside this world, but somehow you're inside your safe space on social media. There you can, this is of course a bridge to my position here. I'm in my safe space as a podcaster. I feel won't be touched by you, by your reaction, your girls, by your eyes, and I can speak and speak, go on for hours. But in my case it's different, because I'm not that beautiful soul. I'm preparing myself to really get dirty and also get out into the real material world. But as I mentioned, it could take a large time frame. Could be months that we're talking, or I don't even know. But my point was, we're all guilty, we're all evil in a sense, and there are also good causes and good wars that should be glad were fought for, like the Bolsheviks, the Revolutionary War in the 1920s, had to defend their newly established rule and socialist entity. Socialist government. But also the French, the Napoleon Wars, he defended the revolution, the French Revolution, and also conquered parts of Germany, like here Baden-Württemberg, and brought us the Code Civil, the laws from France that were based upon this revolutionary spirit of everyone should be equal, and also fraternité, égalité, liberté, freedom, well, brotherliness, sisterliness, and liberty, freedom, not liberty, and equality, of course. These are the three. But I find this very cute, this brotherliness or sisterliness. This is fraternité, and this is what we read in Ephailos, fraternisieren, fraternize. This is this solidarize also, fraternity. And this comes from the French Revolution, or at least there it was this one big ideal. But the Napoleon, this violence used back then, somehow all our rights today and the liberties that have been fought for are founded upon this. And this is a progress, of course. I'm glad to be living in such a state, in a democratic bourgeois state, which is a progress from the feudal aristocratic rule. But back then, 200 years back, it was revolutionary to be all for this bourgeois democracy. But today, it's reactionary. It depends on the time you're living in. It served its purpose, but now it's time to go for capitalism. It was important to develop and to free all this industrial power and mightiness of production, but now it has to be overthrown, it has to be further developed into socialism. And yeah, but somehow we're all affirming the violence back then used in the French Revolution, and we can't be beautiful souls and saying, oh yeah, this was so horrendous time, because we're all also profiting from it. We couldn't live the way we live today if this hadn't taken place and these fights wouldn't have been fought. We're all benefiting from it, profiting. Yeah. Therefore, yeah, somehow we have to make these differentiations in history and say it's of course not good that people die, but have to distinct here and say there are really senseless imperialist wars that are evil or that should be halted and stopped at any cost, but there could be also a fight that would be good to support, like the anti-fascist fights then in the 20th centuries. And yeah, but just that one phrase I mentioned in a private podcast I recorded back in November, all this private podcast, that somehow I talked about me also liking the situation with the war. Now we have this Ukraine war, and I talked a lot about it in my German podcast, and it also gets me jacked up in a way. I was saying in this private podcast, yeah, I was already getting into this thinking like, wow, it's a great thing that this war exists, and can always go on talking about it in the podcast, like saying, yeah, fucking war and so on, this and that, I explain it, what it's all about. And this is the thing that, yeah, you have to be conscious of this, that somehow it gets normalized and gets part of your routine, your daily routine, and feel like, oh, it's great that there is this war, so I have to something to talk about in my podcast. And yeah, this is perverse, of course, but I have to get it out here because also for you girls, of course for all of us, it was somehow a good development in a way that this war started, because I could meet you, and you could come here to Germany, but this, of course, this also has to be said, to say to the Ukrainian soldiers that they should lay down their arms, and they're fighting here for a lost cause. They shouldn't be loyal to the regime. This is the strategy of imperialism, which will simply grind them there in a bloody fight until death, and then extract the most valuable working capacities out of your country, like you two girls. Extract then these individuals so they can work in our Western imperialist countries. And yeah, this all has to be thought together. And yeah, just wanted to say that I don't look at you girls in any way, or at all Ukrainians in any way condescending, and now because we're all part of it, and I also feel that I don't have the answer to this war, and yeah, just have gone analyzing, but you have to be aware of it, that once you get part, once you enter the real outside world, you already get evil and you become part of it, and it's not to be avoided. You have to take a standpoint, because if not, you're only going to be a slave of your regime. It's, has its ideological tentacles around you. And yeah. And I also sensed this when talking with my roommates. I didn't tell them about me being a communist yet. I thought about it. thought about some of these days I wanted to tell them also about my podcast, because it would be nice to get some feedback and put this crazy situation with these Ukrainian girls there at work. I don't know what they would be thinking about. I thought about this, and just when you talked about the war, of course I never mentioned my real opinion, like hiding again with my two-faced personality. And but I sensed this, that they were also feeling a little guilty for being here. And of course, if you are part of this Zelensky propaganda, then of course you can feel guilty. I mean, you're fleeing and leaving there to not be part of the army. And in this way you're not supporting your country, and therefore feel like you have to be even more... You have to, at least here in Germany, be ideologically part of your regime, and talking to people and being really decisive, demonstrating to people that Ukrainians are willing to fight on. And this is Oriana, I just saw in you, and don't blame you in any way for it. Just highly understand it, especially in males who flee, then, like my roommate here, that they feel like they should have been part of the army, but of course nobody wants to get killed like this, and therefore he maybe feels in, I don't know, but that you need to be condemning Russia even more, and being part of this. I mean, it's simply not an easy situation for him, or also for you girls, but I think it's more complex than as a man if you just escape this great danger of really being killed, getting slaughtered there at the front lines. And he also told me this, that he was in the army, or at least in the military school, but didn't like it. Always sometimes the prejudice in Ukraine that you have to be in the army to be a real man. But didn't like when his supervisors made them run for 2 hours with their masks, with their chemical masks on, and they were really old, couldn't breathe a lot, and the supervisor was just angry at them for something someone had said, and then made him do this. And I understand. I'm so glad, at least for him, that he could escape. And yeah, but I think we can move on with this and leave this gloomy topic to say that it's all ambivalent, also in wars. Also brings good sides, benefits, or at least for some people, of course for the bourgeois class it's somehow rational, the bourgeoisie of Western Europe and North America, imperialist bourgeoisie supporting Ukraine, somehow necessary to do this and to weaken Russia. And then for the Ukrainian bourgeoisie to be allies of them, but then of course also for you proletarians working now here in Germany, this is then also a chance then that you could come here. And many people of course want to stay, like also my roommate said, I want to stay and work here because now he has a good job. It's not the same. Ukraine, simply, of course you would like to go back if you just could work and earn money like here, not even earn that much maybe, but just that there were some functioning economic structures, you could find a work. And with this, I think I gotta read this poem, I didn't mind, because I already published this poem in German over the episodes. It was all splattered, scattered, was scattered over the show notes. I broke it up, this German poem, and broke this up and published it, but didn't read it yet because it was too hard. This was something innovative. Didn't dare to write about Lily and Zori, about these two fictional characters. Yeah, it's all fictional in that way. We have to be a little conservative here and say that, yeah, what can I do? It's my artistical automatism. And yeah, this poem I wrote in German, but here I translated it with Google Translator, and I think you can read it in English so you understand. Maybe you had thought earlier the poet should not reveal anything from his intimate life, and only transform everything in poetry, giving everything out only sublimated. But far from it. Here I come and redefine the standards. So these two Ukrainian flowers, who I met at work, they are so flourishing in the field that they are the whole world to me. No question, no problem. I never want to look at others again, because you, my two, are so wonderful, so young and shiny, intelligent and joking. If only your attention would also come to rest on me. I don't claim to be the only one for you, but one. Please bear with me. I know I need to mend in so many things and will often arouse your anger and resentment. Will have to become a better person, says here. Have to mend. Make mends. Interesting word. Didn't know to use this, but I think this translation is quite good, quite acceptable from Google. Yeah. Both Zoriana and Lilia, I welcome your both and your vulvas. Translated just here with vagina, but of course this verse is a lot better in German because it somehow also rhymes, but never mind. Ihr beiden seid mir willkommen und eure Scheiden, aber nicht nur die. Yeah, I can read it in German later, maybe next time. Let's move on here. And your vulvas. But by no means only those, not the most. I gotta get that straight, straighten up. Much dearer and more pleasant than thinking about sex is the idea of the homely conversations with you. One time about the war, the other time about your vacation in Switzerland. And those were the main two times at which the three of us all chatted excitedly together. I talked to you much more alone between us, Lilia, and the other stuff listened, including Zoriana. I thought I noticed something about her. She was shining, noticing the love associations building up in me, in you, maybe in the whole room and building. Anyway, you are my favorite, Lilia, no question. because talking to you is so close, so natural, sublime, and I need nothing more in life than to see your smiling lips and follow your mouth moving, pacing, stretching out to the side and revealing your words. Thank you so much for everything you gave me. But there is also Zoriana, and I'm more afraid of her. I'm more afraid of her should a spark of resentment, of distrust fall on me from her eyes. Yes, Zoriana, this is the thing about you, that you're also masculine in a way, and you're caught up in your own world sometimes. You have this special posture and tensity also, but you also like to bow your head a little and your shoulders sometimes, and it's somehow a gesture of modesty I sense in it also, and maybe this makes a lot of sense in you because you feel that you're so sprightly, vivid, and with all your femininity, you get all men at least around you are so aroused, excited, and therefore you feel you have to be a little humble and modest, and you somehow keep your head down. I notice this sometimes when you walk to the kitchen, but I also notice somehow something in you that makes me fear if only a spark of resentment or distrust would fall from your eyes on me, I'd be scattered and I'd be really shaken, and therefore it says here that I fear you more than Lilia, because with her, of course, I feel she's my sister, could nothing bad happen between us. Yeah, I trembled, for she is so eloquent and impeccably accurate at work, never gives up, gets to the bottom of every problem, dedicates herself to the company's unconditional service. What I admire and can hardly believe, how strong, productive, and determined one can be. We are not like that, you and I, my most beautiful Lilia. We're both rather sluggish and give ourselves over to the moods, curse the work, the boss, the customers. And that's okay, it's normal, especially as workers locked into capitalism. That's why I love you so much, because this isomorphism exists between us. You, as a mathematician, you'll know what that means. You can do something with this term. You can do anything, Lilia. If I can make it possible, then I'll take care of you, financially and otherwise, so that you can study again or do something else. Devote yourself to your art. I just want you to be free. Flutter up like a young bird that still has so much to do and flies up into the blossoming morning full of sun. And yeah, I feel somehow maybe it's enough for this time, because the poem goes on and it gets also more explicit and more back-breaking or... Yeah, but I don't know, Zoriana, talking about you then again, but also about my own body parts, especially my penis, then coming into the mix later, because I had this feeling writing about the vulvas, about how you're welcome to me, and that somehow also, of course, I enjoy this. You being so feminine, you too, and also of course having these vulvas, putting this question to my head, could this be one time that we somehow get to know under the bed cover and discover also these intimate parts. But therefore I also had to bring in this then my own anatomy. But I think for today maybe gotta leave it at this point to tease you, right? To tease you for the next time. And I think with this really I summed it up. I mean, this poem is good. I noticed now also in English it doesn't take away the flow, the rhythm of the words, and I can maybe lay hands on it to make it a little more accurate than this automated translation from Google, which is still quite good, but some things don't match, and therefore I'll work on it until next time. And for now I can only play one more song for you, and we wanted to talk German also. I don't know, yeah, why not. Let's just read this first part I read now in German, first part of the poem, and after that we can play a song, or we can also read Michel Houellebecq's poetry. Yeah, I mean, I scattered my own poem, this poem, in the show notes. I feel like I should also do it here now, reading it out, because it's an intense thing I'm expressing. I don't even know that you two are somehow there catching it somehow, but still I want only to have this love monopoly, establish the monopoly only for you, Lilia, and but still somehow also at least looking at Zoriana feels like, yeah, somehow she's also part of our love circle. But now I will play another song, and this song should fit in quite nicely because it talks about poetry. It's a German song, a German rapper, Sammy Deluxe, I think is his name, and he's rapping there about how all these new rappers are coming into the game and destroying the art that he created, because he somehow was very early in the game in the 2000s. I remember my brother also liked to listen to him back then in elementary school already, I think. And this was 20 years ago. And now he says, yeah, now there's so many rappers and they're destroying it. They don't even know how to rap, how to write poetry. And therefore he writes this song, Poesie album, poetry album. And let's listen to this and enjoy this. After this I will go on for a little longer.
Guck mal hier, dies mein Poesiealbum. Schau mal rein in mein Poesiealbum. Schwarz auf weiß in mein Poesiealbum. Hallo Deutschland, kennt ihr mich noch? Kennt ihr das noch? Echten Hip-Hop in einem Land, wo man sogar mit einem Hip-Flop, wo der Soul keine Seele hat, der Rock nicht rockt, wo man Funk auf der Funke nicht überspringt und der Reggae leider nach Schlagerliedern klingt und der Rap so eine schlechte Reputation hat. Wer kann dieses Gefühl von damals wiederbringen? Wer bitte, wer kann es sein? Sag mir den Namen und ich nehme ihn unter Vertrag oder die oder sie, ganz egal wer es ist. Hast du bitte meine E-Mail oder Nummer parat? Nein, es gibt keinen, denn die Sänger singen und die Rapper klingen, als hätten sie nie Hunger gehabt. Nur so gewässert mit deiner Dalalia, umsonst gibt keiner mit Geschmack, hätte die runtergeladen. Denn nun ist es da, unmittelbar, 100 Karat. Warum ich das sage, ich bin so brillant, so phänomenal, fundamental, radikal, so wie in jüngeren Jahren, dass ich direkt aus dem Untergrund kam und diese Position, die ich mir hier erarbeitet habe, kann keine Geldsumme bezahlen, aber ich komme nicht klar auf diese ganzen Rapper, die scheinbar nichts wissen über diese Kunstform und deshalb muss hier die Masse von Neuem bekämen, das Verständnis für unsere Kunstform, denn ich hab dieses Haus hier mit aufgebaut, ich hab's demoliert, ich hab's renoviert, ich bin der Super MC, ich bin das Buch von Jay-Z, ich hab Rap für die Masse nicht dekodiert, definiert, etabliert und noch mehr schlaue Worte mit dir, und wenn ihr vermutet, ich sei hier der beste Poet, dann vermute ich, dass ihr euch nicht irrt. Ich bin nur ein Fremder und habe mich aus Versehen verirrt. Ja, es gibt tausende Rapper da draußen, auf wen interessiert's? Guck mal hier, dies mein Poesiealbum. Schau mal rein, lies mein Poesiealbum. Schwarz auf weiß, mein Poesiealbum. Ich bin so Schiller, so Goethe, so bitter, so böse, noch immer der größte Poet, der ihr lebt. Wenn ihr jetzt noch mehr wollt, fütter ich euch deutschen Dichterreime, bis ihr alle brecht wie Berthold. Das ist für mich echt der Erfolg, wenn der Text noch mehr rollt. Und ich schein wie der Morgenstern, aber dass ihr alle aus den Reimen und den Worten lernt. Meine Damen und Herren, was würde ich bloß tun? Hier wär ich nicht Rapstar, wahrscheinlich ich der neue Erich Kästner. Lasst die ganzen Leiterscheine auf endlich lästern. Würde ich heulen, Hass werde ich besser. Kletter hoch auf der Karriere, Trepper. Oh nein, das heißt Karriereleiter. Wenn zu Fehler war, dann nur ein derbe Kleiner. Und ja, ich bin ein sehr gemeiner Rapper, der aus der Masse heraussticht. Du bist einfach nur irgendeiner. Was du machst, interessiert überhaupt nicht. Wünsch, der Flow wäre mehr wie meiner. Kannst gern probieren zu kopieren, doch ich glaub's nicht, dass du es schaffst oder raffst, was ich mach, wie ich's mach. Wenn ich mach, ist es einfach unglaublich. Es ist wie wenn Willem Tell und William Shakespeare auf Crap wäre, nach ein paar Packs wären. Und ich bin brauner und noch ein bisschen sexier. Check den Text hier. So flüssig und heil, nenn ihn Elixier. Das ist Zaubertrank, bitte merkst dir. Bitte merkst dir, bitte merkst dir. Lass sie alle reden, lass sie Halle beben, was für ein geiles Leben. Ich mache Scheine, Scheine, indem ich reime, reime, so wie Heinrich Heine. Album kommt im Frühjahr, meine Konkurrenz wird spätestens im August ein Fall erleben. Der Richter und Henker für Dichter und Denker. Er stürzt ab, denn er war von der Dürre matt und stand zu dicht am Geländer. Von meinem Hotel-Suite-Balkon. Und das war's aus meinem Poesie-Album. Und darauf reimt sich grobe Viehhaltung. Punkt. Guck mal hier, dies mein Poesie-Album. Schau mal rein, lies mein Poesie-Album. Schwarz auf weiß in mein Poesie-Album.
Ja, das war doch deutsche Poesie. Sollte genügen, um das hier für einen deutschen Podcast zu qualifizieren. So, let's switch back to English, but only to switch back to Germany. Totally spinning around now. Switching from one side to the other dialectically. Dialectical turn of the sides, but I'm already tired. Just let me read the beginning of my poem in German. Vielleicht hatte man früher gedacht, der Dichter sollte nichts preisgeben von seinem Intimleben und alles nur transformieren in der Dichtung, alles nur sublimiert hinausgeben. Aber weit gefehlt. Da komme ich und definiere die Maßstäbe neu. Diese beiden ukrainischen Blümchen also, die ich bei der Arbeit traf, die stehen so blühend im Felde, dass sie für mich die ganze Welt sind. Keine Frage, kein Problem. Nie wieder möchte ich andere ansehen. Denn ihr, meine beiden, seid so wundervoll, so jung und glänzend, intelligent und scherzend. Und wenn nur eure Aufmerksamkeit auch auf mir zu ruhen käme, nicht der Einzige für euch zu sein beanspruche ich, wohl aber einer. Bitte habt Nachsicht mit mir. Ich weiß, ich muss mich bessern in so vielen Dingen, und werde oft dein Zorn und Groll erregen. Oder besser vielleicht hier euren Zorn und Groll. Werde oft euren Zorn erregen. Cause your fury. Sowohl Soriana als auch Lilia, ihr beide seid mir willkommen. Und eure Scheiden. Aber bei weitem nicht nur die, nicht die am meisten. Das muss ich klarstellen, gerade rücken. Viel lieber und angenehmer als an Sex zu denken, ist mir die Vorstellung der heimeligen Gespräche mit euch. Da war das eine Mal über den Krieg, das andere Mal über euren Schweizurlaub. Und das waren die hauptsächlichen beiden Male, an denen wir alle zusammen zu dritt angeregt tratschten. Vielmehr habe ich mit dir geredet, allein, unter uns, Lilia. Und die anderen Mitarbeiter hörten zu. Auch Soriana. Ich glaubte, etwas an ihr zu bemerken. Sie schien wahrzunehmen, wie sich die Liebesassoziationen anstauten, ausbreiteten. In mir, in dir, vielleicht in dem ganzen Raum und Gebäude. Jedenfalls bist du mir am liebsten, Lilia, keine Frage, weil das Reden mit dir so nah, so natürlich vortrefflich ist und ich nichts mehr brauche im Leben, als deine lächelnden Lippen sehen und deinen Mund verfolgen, der sich bewegt, auf und ab geht, zur Seite sich langzieht und deine Worte preisgibt. Ich danke dir so sehr für alles, was du mir schenktest. Aber da ist auch noch Soriana. Und vor ihr habe ich mehr Angst. Sollte mal ein Funke der Missgunst, des Misstrauens aus ihren Augen auf mich fallen, erzittere ich. Denn sie ist so beredt und tadellos akkurat bei der Arbeit. Gibt nie nach, geht jedem Problem auf den Grund. Stellt sich in den bedingungslosen Dienst der Firma. Was ich bewundere und kaum glauben kann, wie stark, produktiv und entschlossen man sein kann. Wir sind nicht so, du und ich, meine schönste Lilia. Wir beiden sind eher träge und geben uns hin den Anwandlungen, verfluchen die Arbeit, den Chef, die Kunden. Und das ist ja in Ordnung, ist normal. Zumal als Arbeiter, die im Kapitalismus eingesperrt sind. Deshalb liebe ich dich so sehr, weil diese Isomorphie zwischen uns besteht. Du als Mathematikerin wirst doch wissen, was das heißt. Kannst etwas anfangen mit diesem Begriff. Du darfst alles tun, Lilia. Wenn ich es ermöglichen kann, dann sorge ich für dich, finanziell und sonstig, damit du wieder studieren kannst oder etwas anderes tun, dich deiner Kunst widmen. Ich will nur, dass du frei bist, aufflatterst wie ein junges Vögelchen, das noch so viel vor sich hat und in den erblühenden Morgen voll Sonne fliegt. Bloom, there's a lot of use of this word, bloom, flowering, flourishing, two flowers in the beginning, and maybe this was not so adequate, should have found a better word, but with this gotta say goodbye to you, all my listeners, and tell you, yeah, this was an official Tischlein deck dich, because it contained the Swaddle German part, and yeah, have a good night, and until next time, see you around, or smell you around, as I said one time. Smell you, hear you, or feel you around, and